you're thinking about writing the book, but you're not actually writing it. Because unless you have got really deep research that you've got to do, you are not writing.
And they base it on their experiences in the war in Afghanistan. And they take a great deal of time to explain in massive detail what happened in certain scenarios and so on. So you almost live that war with them.
And that's where people from a corporate perspective struggle, because their thinking is, if I'm putting a job out for tender, only Rudolph can get the job or I can get the job. There's no both of us winning. It's you or me. So they come into it with a very competitive nature, which is appropriate from a corporate perspective. But from a reader's perspective, it's not the same.
Before we start this podcast, I've got one little favor to ask you. Can you please hit the subscribe button down below so we can help more people every single week? Thank you. Welcome to the Right Place podcast, where we learn with you how to build connections that matter, relationships that last, and businesses that thrive. My name is Rudolph Rautenbach, and today I'm talking to Kim Vermaak from Write, Learn, and Earn. Kim, it's great to chat to you again.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Rudolph.
Good, Kim. We've met through Chris Fenning's tour earlier in 2024, and I quickly learned that you are in this publishing industry, of which at the time I knew nothing. I want to find out why your big interest in books.
Basically transformed my life quite literally. So just before COVID, a short while before COVID, I had written an article on Facebook, and a woman that I used to be a supplier of mine stumbled across this article that I wrote. And she contacted me and she said, did you write this article yourself? So I said, yes. So she didn't copy it from someone else. You really wrote it yourself. So I said, yes. And she said to me, you shouldn't be in the industry that you're in. You should be a writer. And I said to her, there's no way. There's no way I'm doing that, because I'd heard of all of these authors who had sent out multiple manuscripts. They get rejected 40, 50 times before someone accepted. And I just didn't feel that I had the appetite for that kind of rejection. So I said to her, there's no way I'm doing that. And she said to me, no, we are going to self-publish and I will teach you, I'll hold your hand. And she came to see me. But then what happened is, as I was writing the first draft, I wrote 42,000 words over the December holidays because our industry shut down and I couldn't do anything else. And we didn't actually have funds to go away for holiday that particular December. So I just wrote. And as I was researching, I thought, if I was going to be traditionally published, how many words would this novel have to be in the genre that I was writing in? And I realized that I needed almost 80,000 words were to be accepted as a manuscript. At that point, my courage failed. But I had on my desk, I had a copy of Blair Singer's Little Voice Mastery. So I picked up that book because I was going to be writing an article about something else. And in there, he said that the creator of the universe has got a gift that he, she, whatever you resonate with, wants to deliver to the world through you. And when you don't pick up that call, you are interrupting that plan. And all of a sudden, I got this kind of visualization in my head that I was getting up to heaven and there was a creator of the universe sitting on the judgment seat. And in my mind, it was like Abraham Lincoln sitting on that big kind of marble chair. And he opened up a book and showed it to me. And when I looked, there were no words on the pages. And he said to me, what did you do with the words that I sent you? And it hit me in the heart. I still get goose flesh when I think about it. And I thought, this is my calling and my lack of courage is interrupting that plan. So Blair Singer's book introduced courage in my life to allow me to continue with the journey. It was a small, small segment of that book. I don't even remember all the other things in the book, but that one small section changed my life. And I realized that I could create the same level of courage inside other people, and that their books might touch other people like Blessing's book touched my life. And so that's one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about books. Beyond just reading, it's about beyond just publishing, it is about touching other people's lives.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm sitting here and I've got 10 follow-up questions in my head suddenly, and one of them is, so you've written two articles, or you've written one article and you're going to write another one, but it sounds to me almost like you've already been writing. So you've already done something. Was that your first article that you've written, or is it something that you've been doing before this came about?
I actually wrote several things over a period of time. Of course, when I was younger, I used to write poetry. I had quite a difficult upbringing, and poetry was a way of expressing myself. Now, I no longer write poetry, but I wrote approximately 100 poems when I was 15 years old. All of them were gone, but it was just my way of processing the world. And then I didn't write for a really long time period. I worked for an office furniture company for a period of time, and I was responsible to make sure that articles were coming out in publications about our organization. And then I didn't write any of those articles. I just made sure that they happened. And one day I got called on to write an article for a publication. It was the first time I ever wrote. It was the last time I ever wrote in the industry, but I did write articles and blogs and things like that for the company that I founded later on. So it was there, but it never really had much more purpose than just getting my business out there. But I never thought of myself as a writer. It was just marketing. That was all I was doing. But that particular article that I wrote on Facebook was very different, because with that article, we had a little cat that just pitched up on our doorstep, and she was pregnant. She had her kittens, and she abandoned them after 3 weeks. So the whole family started rearing these little kittens, hand-rearing them, which is murder on the hands, because they've got little sharp teeth and claws. And so we had shifts. My husband would rear, my daughter would rear. We all had a little go at taking care of these kittens. And they climbed up the tree one day, and because there was no mommy to teach them how to get down, we sent my husband up. And we said it was a 6 foot, he's 6 foot three guy, but the tree was really, really tall. So off he went, and we were looking at the tree, and we were like, move a little to the left. There's a branch there. So he cleared out some stuff, and we're telling him how to go. And while I'm looking at this, I think there's a lesson in this. And the article I wrote was about the lessons that I learned from the Great Kitten Rescue. And it was that you have to have a vision. Know where you're going. Then sometimes there's going to be stuff in your way. You've got to clear that stuff out. You need to have a team. A group of cheerleaders that are saying this way, that way, maybe some mentors that are seeing things that you're not seeing yet because everything is in your way. And so I wrote an article about that, and it was the first time that I had written something that actually embraced the wisdom. Now, a lot of people have often said to me, you know, when we come to you, Kim, we've got a problem, you've got a lot of wisdom in it, but I'd never packaged it. It was just who I was. And this is the first time I packaged it and other people recognized it.
That's fantastic. I can hear that you are a bit of a storyteller as well. And obviously the storytelling comes through then in the book. And I know you from the Public Speakers Association, and that you actually, is it public or professional? I'm mistaken here now. But you also do a lot of speaking, and I think, there's this line that runs across speaking and writing. And then I know you've got a little bit of a podcast going as well, that you talk to other authors and so on. So how do you see this link in between the three areas that you're involved in with the writing and the speaking, and then obviously putting that on video and podcasts as well?
So if you are a writer, a lot of writers feel that they've got to just write the book and the book will magically sell itself. And that doesn't happen. You actually have to be out there in the public speaking about your book and your content. So I was at the Expert Speaker Summit, the Expert Author Summit this past week. And Douglas Kruger was busy speaking to us on a topic. And he said that being seen as an expert is basically in the middle of three different things. Number one, your actual knowledge on the topic. Number two, your personality, because sometimes speakers and writers are dealing with the same topics, but there can only be one you. And number three, your publicity, how you get out there, how people are seeing your personality and your expertise coming across. And I didn't realize it, but I have been following that philosophy for quite some time, but he has named it. And so the link of it is that the writing is the part of your knowledge that you are bringing across. When you are writing, your personality is also interwoven into the writing. And the speaking part is the important part, because no one is going to know about your wisdom, your content, unless you are prepared to put yourself out into the public eye and speak about it. And that's where there's a beautiful marriage with the Professional Speakers Association, because they teach you how to package yourself to get out into the world. Now, you spoke about the podcasting, and the reason that I'm doing the podcasting is I developed my author brand and my voice through watching other podcasts for writers. It allowed me to learn from their concepts and to embrace who I am. So when authors are on my programs, I make sure that they have a slot on the Write, Learn, and Earn show so they can share their expertise. And very often what we'll do is, if the author wants it, we'll take out the segment that's only them on the camera so that they can use that to create Power Reels. I have an author that has just launched a book, and she got an international PR company to help her as well. And she used the interview that we did together to showcase something about the book. And it's done in a nice professional way, because I always use a professional videographer to do those in-person podcasts. So it helps the speakers who are professional in their approach to get their stuff out there.
Now, very good. I do agree. I think the book on a shelf or on a file somewhere counts for nothing, and it needs to be sold and needs to be read. And you can't get people interested in it if you can't talk about it and if you don't market it. You're also a book coach, and I quite liked that angle when we first met. And I tried to understand, what is a book coach? So maybe elaborate a little bit on what you do as a book coach. Who needs it? Is it for every genre? Is it very specific in maybe fiction or more academic? What is it that a book coach typically does for an author?
Book coach does a couple of things, but one of the primary responsibilities of a book coach, like any other coach, is accountability. So very often we hear people say, oh, I'm writing a book. And then you say, well, how long have you been writing for it? And sometimes they'll say 2 years, 5 years, 15 years. And then you quickly realize, particularly if you are a writer, you're not writing that book. You're thinking about writing the book, but you're not actually writing it. Because unless you have got really deep research that you've got to do, you are not writing. So an accountability aspect of book coaching is that we meet on a monthly basis, and every week I ask my authors to give me their word count, to give me the lessons that they've learned. Our one-on-one sessions that we do, I kind of do a combination of massaging the book out of them, or sometimes I'm wrestling the book out of them. Because what a lot of authors have, and I've had it myself, is that we have those little voices inside our heads that tell us these self-limiting beliefs. And so my role with the author is not to write the book for them, but to help them to release the book. So we go through, it's a six-month program, we go through what their ideas are, I do a little bit of reader feedback for them, tell them what works, what doesn't work, what they can improve on, and I'm their first sounding board before we take it to a professional editor who is then going to work on corrections and helping them rewrite and that kind of thing.
That sounds very interesting. I want to quickly go back to a portion of the question that I framed, and that is in terms of the genre, I can see it working very well within something that is more creative. But what would you say in terms of, let's say, a textbook or something like that? Is it also a process that you see working effectively?
So with textbooks, it's a completely different kind of genre, and you do get people that assist you to present your research, your ideas in quite a logical format. But with nonfiction books, if we sit away from the textbook side, if we look at the nonfiction side, most of us are wired to learn from stories. So what I do with my nonfiction writers, so even though I write fiction, I also write nonfiction. And I quickly learned one of my best books that I ever read was The 1 Minute Millionaire. The reason that I love that book is that I had read too many textbooks when I was studying, and I was kind of over that. So if you bring me a nonfiction book and it's boring, I am not going to be finishing it. But with The 1 Minute Millionaire, I tore through that book, because what they did is they took business principles and they wove it into a novel. I couldn't put that book down. I still remember so many of the lessons that were inside that book because it was told to me as a story. So when I work with nonfiction authors, I want to know what are the big turning points in their life that made them realize something that's going to be helpful to other people. So coincidentally, just this week, I was speaking to a young woman who said that she learned something quite profound in her 30s. She was put into a leadership position. And when she did that, it was with an organization, a whole bunch of people left. And that created a massive crisis in her confidence. And she had to say, well, someone believed in me to put me into this leadership role, but some people are not believing in me. What are the next steps that I need to take so that I can prove my leadership style to other people? And of course, when she shared that with me, I'm like really interested. Now I want to know, what are the things she did that turned it around for her? Because we're going from that crisis, that inciting moment, to like, what is the hero's journey along here? And all of a sudden, when she starts sharing with me the things she did in those circumstances, I take them more seriously, because now I know she's applied it. She's told it to me in a compelling way. I'm going to be paying more attention. In contrast, if she just said to me, there are three things that you need to do to build your leadership as a young person, then I'm like, okay, well, that's, you know, interesting, but it doesn't grip my heart. It doesn't motivate me to apply those principles.
Yeah, it makes me think of the book that I recently read called Extreme Ownership, and it's Navy SEALs that wrote it. And it's exactly what you said, is it's leadership principles. And they base it on their experiences in the war in Afghanistan. And they take a great deal of time to explain in massive detail what happened in certain scenarios and so on. So you almost live that war with them. And then they'll have two or three pages explaining how it applies to business. And that is the real principle. But you remember the principle because of the story that was told just before that. And that is probably 20 or 30 pages. But you, if you like that type of story, it grips you. And then the principle gets stuck. So I agree. It makes a lot of logical sense that way. If you start marketing a book, because you mentioned earlier on that you, by writing the book doesn't mean it's gonna sell. So you need to market it. How do you go about effectively, actively marketing a book?
Well, it's quite interesting because traditionally as business people, we do product development and then we do marketing. But with writers, it's a little bit different. So my very first book, I fell into that trap. I write the book, and then I market it. But there's a certain sequence of events that you've got to go through beforehand. So you have got to start developing a warm audience for your book. And particularly, it can be on fiction and nonfiction. I've used the principles for both situations. You start by creating a little bit of a lead magnet. Now, depending on the kind of genre you're writing, for fiction, you would write a short story, but it must be a complete story, not a sample. A lot of people do a sample of their book and readers cotton onto that. They're like, you're just trying to sell me something. So you write a complete story that people can download for free in exchange for sharing their email address. If you are a nonfiction author, you would do something else. Now, that could be a guide. It could be the 10 steps that you need to take in order to revolutionize your team dynamic. Or it could be the 4 things that all salespeople are not doing and that is stopping them from developing good business relationships. So people look at that and think, oh, that sounds interesting. They download that. They get it for free. They get an experience of you as an expert, as a writer, a speaker, or maybe sometimes it could even be a free course that they can get, a mini course. And then from there, you start engaging with them with valuable content, things that are going to be interesting to them. Now, it takes a lot of patience because you've got to develop this lead list over a period of time. And statistically, you only start seeing good results when you get to about 2,000 people. It can be heartbreaking because they're going to be people who unsubscribe. And in the beginning of my career, when I got those unsubscribes, I used to freak out. I'm like, oh, people don't like me. You know, they don't like my work. And then someone said to me, no, that is a filtering system. Those people were not your right audience. The people who are your right audience will stick with you. And I've experienced the most amazing things. I had one lady who sent me her family recipe book that went over 4 generations because I wrote an article. That newsletter was for medieval fantasy fans, but I wrote an article about kinds of things that people in medieval times would have eaten over the Christmas time period. And she wasn't the only lady who interacted with me. Some guy sent me his family pumpkin pie recipe. So that was really amazing. And then, you know, on the nonfiction side, there are people who also interact with me, share things with me. So you get to know who your real tribe is, who the people are that are going to follow you. So when your book comes out, you have a warm audience who already respect the work that you do and then will say, oh, I want to read that book. If you develop super fans, it can be quite remarkable the kinds of things that they can do for you, but it can also be, it's a big responsibility. I have a lady that sent me a message. Now, after my father passed away, which is roughly 2 years ago, I stopped writing my 5th book in that particular series. And she was very empathetic, but then one day she said to me, Kim, you know, there's an author and we waited for one of his sequels for 10 years. She says, don't be that writer. So she sends me messages and now that she's got my WhatsApp number, she sends me a message every day and sort of every now and then she'll send me a little picture of a dragon. And then I'll say, is this a hint? And she'll say, yes, it's a hint because that book has got dragons in it. So they take you very, very seriously. And a humorous thing for the fiction side is that I have people that speak to me about my characters as if they're real people. So I've had someone that said, no, that friar would never have done that. And I'm like, I'm the author. This is the way the friar would have done it. And this is the reason. And then I had some lady who contacted me and she said to me, I so hated that guy in book number two. But when he died, I felt so bad that I hated him because then I realized why he was like that. So it's a lot of fun seeing how they will embrace things and how they'll share if that, if, even if your book is nonfiction, if you've got something that has really resonated with a reader and that really helped them, they will, like I just shared with you about Blair Singer's book, they will share that with their friends. They'll say, read this. One of my book coaching clients has got an elderly mother. My mother is also old, very old, and she's quite frail, and she wants to die at home. She doesn't want to go to an institution. Her words to me were, I will die here and the worms will carry me. That's the way it's going to be. So my immediate thought is, oh, no, 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 no. We can't do that. She must go to an institution. And so he said to me, read this book, Being Mortal, and you will see that it is a fundamental human right to be able to choose the place of your death. So you are worried about your mom, and it's understandable, but for her quality of life, dying at home is so important. Your role now is to find ways to support her in that decision. And that was quite life-altering for me because he could see that I had a crisis. And he said to me, this is the thing that's going to help you. It's revolutionized my thinking when I speak to my mom about her health, longevity, and that kind of thing. And it gave me a sense of peace. So that was a tremendous gift to me, that knowledge that somewhere out there, there's someone who's got a solution to my problem.
Yeah, it makes me think quite a bit about what we do on the Right Place podcast as well, where we speak about networking and relationships and building a trust relationship essentially. And you've taken it now from a lead magnet point of view and building this warm audience. But in essence, it comes down to building relationships with people and keeping that flow of information, but even building that trust and delivering on certain things. And that's what this crowd of yours, that's what they want. And you are actually feeding them in terms of what they like and what they want, but they get value from it. That's why they are there. And it brings me to my next question, which is whether you see value in networking as an author and a publicist, I suppose, but is there value in networking? Is there value in building these relationships? And is it essential to getting the book to be sold later on?
It actually is essential. A couple of things. Number one, if you are struggling with a certain aspect of your book, there are other people that can help you with that. So sometimes you'll belong to writers' groups, and they'll be quite niche-like writers' groups. So we don't share information specifically about our book ahead of time, but you could be saying, I have this particular problem. How do I solve this situation? My husband sometimes will proofread my books and give me some kind of feedback. And you can have other people within your author community that can do that. So it's an extra person to bounce off ideas. I know that when Scoobs in Johannesburg was still around, they used to have an author networking group. And it was quite funny. She didn't remember this. But there was one woman that the manager had told me, go and connect with her. She's like you. She's bootstrapping this whole book thing. She doesn't have a rich husband, trust fund, or unlimited money to help her build a business. She's doing it in little bits and pieces, and she can be really, really helpful. And I went to her and I spoke to her. I completely forgot this conversation. I said, at the moment, I'm struggling to get my family to understand why I'm doing this writing thing. I kind of feel like I'm stealing time away from my main income source. And how do I like navigate this thing? Maybe I should just ditch it. And she said to me, don't ditch it. Just continue. There was another group that I got involved with, and I said, you know, these are my challenges. And they said to me, as long as you are putting in the normal amount of hours that other people put into their normal business, their normal job, then what you do with your free time is no one else's business. It's your choice. And those kinds of words of encouragement made a massive difference to me in how I approach things. Plus, when I did have problems, I could go through and say, how did you do this? How did you do that? Now, there are programs that encourage and are actually set up for author swaps. So I read, from a fiction perspective, I would read Wilbur Smith, but I also read Clive Cussler. So when Wilbur Smith hasn't got a new book out, I can't sit around twiddling my thumbs. I'm looking for some kind of other adventure book, and then I would go to Clive Cussler. But it doesn't mean that I'm never going to read Wilbur Smith again. I will just wait for the next book to come out. And that's where people from a corporate perspective struggle, because their thinking is, if I'm putting a job out for tender, only Rudolph can get the job, or I can get the job. There's no both of us winning. It's you or me. So they come into it with a very competitive nature, which is appropriate from a corporate perspective. But from a reader's perspective, it's not the same. So what we do with the author collaborations is, if you and I are both bringing out a book on leadership, I'm still writing my book. I will, in my newsletter, I will say, Rudolph has got this really fantastic book about networking and leadership and how you can be a more effective leader by networking. Read this book. Okay. Now people are looking at me and they're saying, Kim has got a lot of interesting books that she recommends. And every time I read one of them, I learn something, my career grows. So I now become the expert in leadership, even though I haven't launched my leadership book yet. Now, when I do launch my book, then Rudolph sends out his email and they'll say, this author, Kim Vermaak, has just launched this really great book about how to build relationships as an expert author. And then people are going to say, Rudolph really gives me a lot of value in my life because he knows all of these really cool people, books, and things that I wouldn't have come across beforehand. So you're winning and I'm winning. And my audience is going to read both your book and my book. So we're both winning, we're both adding value. So networking within your genre is critically important for the marketing of your book.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I want to add maybe to that in terms of the PSA, in that I've attended one of your keynotes and then encouraged a lot of them to start writing a book. They're all storytellers, they're all experts in some sort of a field, and it could obviously be good for them to write it down so that someone goes home and they've got something to carry on with this 45-minute lesson that they've just learned through a keynote. Maybe they can take it home and study that and go into greater depth, maybe, or if it's fiction or whatever, but in that way, you're actually creating competition in the traditional sense, because it's other authors, but I mean, it's different genres, it's different, completely different aspects. And for the same money, the PSA, it's a competitive field of public speakers, but I cannot see the professional jealousy that you sometimes get in other sectors where people are competing to such an extent that they don't promote the other person. And that's one thing that I took out of those sessions, in that they're very pro each other. They're very much supporting each other. And I get the same sense in this case with the networking and the promotion of each other's material and books then.
And the interesting thing, I shared an anecdotal story with another group quite recently, is that I was an MC for an organization and they invited me the first time. And then the second time when they invited me, we had one of the speakers that got swine flu. So she dropped off for two sessions because it was a two-day event. And so he contacted me because he lives in a different province to me, but the event was hosted here in Johannesburg. And he said, I've got a problem. I've lost two slots. Do you know any speakers? And I said, absolutely, I do know some speakers. And I networked within my organization. I said, these are the kinds of topics that I'm looking for. Is there anyone who can, you know, fill in the gap? And I found two people on our WhatsApp group who said they're happy to talk. Now what has happened is my reputation has been elevated with the client because I'm now adding value to him. And I wouldn't have done that if I didn't take the time to build those relationships, because I already knew who would be quite a good fit. And because I knew how to find the marketing material. In fact, here's an interesting thing. For one of the talks that I did, Ursula Buerta, she did a video testimonial for me. And that is on my YouTube channel where I have all of my other testimonials about me as a speaker. I didn't have any material available from her to show her quality of speaking except that testimonial. So I sent the testimonial to the event coordinator. I said, this lady, she is really an exceptional person, brings a lot of energy to the table. I think she would be perfect for your event. And because he heard her speaking about me and saw the energy she brings through, he said, that lady is perfect. So I didn't expect that to happen. I mean, it was just a testimonial, but it allowed me something to market her with. Because she gave something to me, I was able to give something back to her.
And that sounds like the perfect win-win situation to me. So you get the testimonial and she got some work out of it. Sounds ideal. Yeah, Kim, we're running out of time here. I want to ask the question that we ask to everyone that we interview, and it relates to your current situation and where you see yourself. And we always end off the show with the question, are you at the right place?
Well, now I'm definitely at the right place because I can see you and you invited me to the talk. But yes, I think so. You know, sometimes we have a vision for where we want to go and the timeline is not what we anticipate. So I always say, I think that I should get a special kind of watch, send it to the creator of the universe and time sync and say, at this time, this is what I would like to have done. And then he says, that's cool. I'll make sure that my timeline is synchronized to your timeline. So sometimes we get like a lot of frustration because it's not quite where we want it to be. But in hindsight, when I look through things, I always realize that there are places and times that things should be happening and will happen. You just need to put your eyes ahead, keep on doing the work, and in the right time and place, everything will come to fruition.
That's very good. I quite like this question and I like the different answers, and I think you've summed it up in that at the moment, you are at the right place, but you know that you're still moving forward as well. And you still have those dreams and aspirations to go for in future. Kim, I want to thank you for your time. It's been so interesting listening to you and the journey that you've been on and just a year where it all started. I think also the way that you encourage other people to go through this process also inspires me to live that life for other people. And I think I commend you for that. Yeah, I appreciate your time. I hope other people can learn something here and that we should always give value to others, that we don't have to be hoarders of knowledge and information and relationships, but to share freely and give that value to other people. And I think you're a great example of that, and I appreciate that. Yeah, any final words maybe from you?
You know, there's one thing that someone who's just, we just recently interviewed on our podcast said about authors, all progress came because people had the courage to share their ideas, even if at the time it didn't make sense. So I just want to say to you, if you're an author, a speaker, or any kind of dreamer, business person, or visionary, be brave.
Cool. And on that note, thank you, Kim, and thank you to the listeners, and we'll see you again at the right place. Bye.
Thank you for having me.